Carolina Shout, which first appeared as a piano roll in 1918, though we're hearing a 1921 piano roll. It was composed and performed there by James P. Johnson, the man reverently known, though not fully encapsulated, I think, by the moniker the Father of Stride Piano. Well, Johnson's work as a performer in the 1920s, with its experimentation and new virtuosity, was a big inspiration on the likes of Fats Waller, Duke Ellington, and later the amazing Art Tatum. And that would be a show enough, and certainly puts him in the pantheon of jazz, but he also had a lasting impact as a composer. He's credited with pushing jazz forward out of ragtime music into stride and then early swing styles. So we'll hear some early Johnson compositions like Jingles and a favorite of mine, Snowy Morning Blues, but we'll also sample his work as an accompanist for Bessie Smith and others, and as leader of his own dance band, which I don't think gets enough credit. Johnson also composed concert music and was a big inspiration on fellow traveler George Gershwin. So we'll hear a little of Johnson's own rhapsody for piano and orchestra called Yamacraw. It's James P. Johnson this time on At the Jazz Band Ball. It's episode number 24. We're a podcast devoted to early jazz from about the 1920s through the 40s. I'm Kevin McLaughlin, and it's great to have you along. James Price Johnson was born in New Brunswick, New Jersey in 1894 and lived 61 years. As a young child, he was exposed to distinctly different kinds of experiences that turned out to be formative. In his home in New Brunswick, he watched his parents and their friends, many of whom had recently moved from the South, sing and dance ring shouts. Well, these were these Christian religious practices of moving in a circle while clapping hands and sometimes shuffling or stomping and sometimes shouting. The second influence was taking piano lessons from his mother and then later not being dissuaded from learning ragtime and blues. He would go to some pretty rough neighborhoods of New Jersey and Manhattan. And the third thing was classical music, believe it or not. He attended concerts in New York and sang as a boy soprano. He also studied piano and voice for 4 years with a man named Bruto Giannini, who helped him improve his classical chops, his piano technique, even while allowing the young James to learn jazz and ragtime. We're going to listen to another early recording by James P. Johnson of a piano roll, and I'll tell you a little bit more about those on the other side. This is Harlem Strut from 1921. Thank you. That was James P. Johnson performing his own Harlem Strut from 1921 on a piano roll. Well, I don't know about you, but I was really struck by the clarity of that recording from something so early. Well, dissemination of jazz, like other styles, was dependent on not only live performances, you know, players going around and appearing in various venues or concert halls, but also on the technology, radio, early phonographs, certainly, and by the 19-teens, the piano roll. And I think one of these days we'll do a whole show on piano roll performances. For the kind that James P. Johnson was using here, it's called a reproducing piano roll. And typically a pianist would sit at a specially designed recording piano, and the pitch and duration of notes would either be marked or perforated on a blank sheet of paper, together with the duration, if you were lucky, a fancier one, of the sustaining and the soft pedal. Recordings have been captured by some pretty famous musicians, including in the classical world, the likes of Camille Saint-Saëns and Gustav Mahler and Claude Debussy and George Gershwin, and by jazz performers such as Jelly Roll Morton, Fats Waller, and James P. Johnson. It's kind of thrilling, actually, to sit down at a player piano, maybe at your grandmother's house, and insert a roll, and then by pushing the pedals, which operate bellows, to see the piano keys move in front of you. It's like a ghost come back to life. I think I was telling you on one of our previous shows that by slowing down the playback, that's how Fats Waller learned to copy the movements of his mentor, James P. Johnson. Well, here's one more piano roll we have of James P. Johnson. It's a recording of his own Charleston. It was a dance number from Johnson's own 1923 Broadway show called Runnin' Wild. And the Charleston became a huge hit and still is pretty recognizable today. Here's the Charleston recorded on a piano roll in 1925 by James P. Johnson. Thank you. James P. Johnson playing his own The Charleston, a dance number from Johnson's 1923 Broadway show called Runnin' Wild. I'm Kevin McLaughlin, and today we're talking about James P. Johnson on At the Jazz Band Ball. Well, the technology of piano rolls was essentially direct-to-disc, like recordings that had something of a comeback in the 1970s, where players would record quite literally onto a master disc without any intervening editing. The difficulty, or thrill, depending on your perspective, was the player's inability to stop or change a performance once the recording was in process. So you're hearing a live performance in the presence, so to speak, of the performer, unaltered, including all nuances or flaws, if any, of interpretation. Well, piano rolls also allowed a longer playing time, 3 to 5 minutes, which was far longer than any phonograph would allow. And one of James P. Johnson's great innovations, of course, was the development and establishment of the stride piano style, which bridged the gap between ragtime and later jazz styles. The term stride comes from the idea of the pianist's left hand leaping or striding across the piano, usually in octaves or tenths, while the right hand played melody and then improvisations on the melody. Well, here's a classic stride from James P. Johnson. This is his number called Jingles. It was written and recorded in 1930. Thank you. Jingles, James P. Johnson, playing his own composition in the stride style from 1930. Well, we're listening to the music of James P. Johnson today on At the Jazz Band Ball. I'm Kevin McLaughlin. It's great to have you along. And by the way, if you're enjoying the podcast, we'd sure love to hear from you. And please leave a comment, or you can rate us on whatever platform you choose to listen on. Our Substack is kevinmclaughlin.substack.com. Next, we're going to turn to James P. Johnson's work as an accompanist and then later as a band leader. Well, during the 20s, James P. Johnson developed into a sensitive accompanist in New York, the favorite accompanist of Ethel Waters and Bessie Smith. Well, Ethel Waters wrote in her autobiography that working with musicians such as, and most especially, James P. Johnson, made you want to sing until your tonsils fell out. Well, let's listen to a duet that Johnson made with Bessie Smith in 1929 called Blue Spirit Blues. And then we'll hear an orchestral arrangement of his own You've Got to Be Modernistic, with Johnson as leader of Jimmy Johnson and his orchestra from 1929. First, Bessie Smith and Blue Spirit Blues.
Had a dream last night that I was dead. Had a dream last night that I was dead. Evil spirits all around my bed. The devil came and grabbed my hand. The devil came and grabbed my hand. Took me way down to that red hot land. Mean blue spirits stuck their forks in me. Mean blue spirits stuck their forks in me. Made me moan and groan in misery. Fairies and dragons spitting out blue flame. Fairies and dragons spitting out blue flame, showing their teeth, for they was glad I came. Demons with the eyelids dripping blood. Demons with the eyelids dripping blood. Dragging sinners through that brimstone flood. This is hell I cried, cried with all my might. This is hell I cried, cried with all my might. Oh, my soul, I can't bear the sight. Start running, cause it is my cup.
up really sick. Cause it's the one and the only reason. If you wanna be more artistic, why you gotta be optimistic. Then you sort of be characteristic, modernistic, that's all.
You've Got to Be Modernistic, and an interesting arrangement of his piano solo composition. This is for a band called Jimmy Johnson and His Orchestra. The personnel is kind of interesting. It includes King Oliver on trumpet, and then Johnson and Fats Waller both on piano. It's hard to tell if there's one or two pianos involved. And then a vocal trio called the Keep Shufflin' Trio, probably a holdover from the 1928 Broadway show Shufflin' Along. And before that, we heard Jimmy Johnson with Bessie Smith in Blue Spirit Blues, recorded in 1929. Well, next we're going to hear one of Johnson's most successful and popular instrumental pieces. It's called a blues, but it technically is not a blues. It's called Snowy Morning Blues, but it's a 16-bar blues. That's okay with me. It was a favorite of Johnson's. He recorded it six times in his career, the first time in 1927, which is what we'll hear, and the last time in 1947. Here's Snowy Morning Blues, 1927.
Thank you.
Snowy Morning Blues, James P. Johnson at the piano in his own composition from 1927. I mentioned James P. Johnson's third source of musical inspiration as a child. In addition to ring shouts, jazz, and ragtime, there was classical music. So I thought it would be interesting to close out the show today with a performance of James P. Johnson's Yamacraw, a Negro Rhapsody. It's a jazz musical composition produced by the father of the blues, W.C. Handy, at New York's Carnegie Hall in 1928. Unfortunately, Johnson was not released from his duties as conductor of the musical Keep Shufflin' for that year, and so his protege, Thomas Fats Waller, played the piano solo part of the concert. The Rhapsody was a response to George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, premiered at Carnegie Hall in 1924. After George Gershwin had such a success with Rhapsody in Blue, James P. Johnson thought he'd try his hand at writing a piece for jazz piano and orchestra, which was truer to the black experience. Yamacraw is, by the way, a black neighborhood in Savannah, Georgia, and the music was inspired by the culture of that neighborhood. Yamacraw was initially composed for the piano, but was performed at Carnegie Hall as a jazz-like orchestral arrangement, a lot like Rhapsody in Blue. It was done by the composer William Grant Still, who was so inspired by the success of the performance, he decided to write his own Afro-American symphony, which he completed in 1931. There is a recording of Johnson performing some of the music on the piano alone, but I thought it would be more interesting to hear what was actually heard at Carnegie Hall in 1928, or at least as we imagine it. Here's the full piano rhapsody in a concert performance by the pianist Gary Hammond, with Richard Rosenberg conducting the Hot Springs Festival Chamber Orchestra from Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's about 15 minutes long, so this is going to do it for us today. And it'll extend the usual length of our show by about 10 minutes. Let me know what you think in the comments on Substack or on one of our podcast platforms. So have a great week, everybody. Here's Yamacraw, written by James P. Johnson. Thank you.
Thank you.